What? A new Die is Cast episode? That's right, casters. I don't know if you've noticed on our social medias, but that's kind of the name that I've been giving our listeners and fans, casters, which is very preferential towards our magic users. But I like it. The Die is Cast, casters. Hello, friends. Happy 2023. Gosh, is it good to be back. First off, we are very, very sorry for the radio silence, but a whole bunch of very cool things are happening, both for the show, but also just our lives. Maddie is in rehearsal, or has been in rehearsal for, you know, 3 or 4 different shows since December. Kevin's pretty busy with his big boy job. Both Emma and I started big people jobs. Diego's working through all the interviews and press of his new video game, and has also created a pretty sweet Twitch channel if you want to go check that out. But yeah, if you haven't played New Tales from the Borderlands or seen him on The Imperfects on Netflix, I guess I'll freak out because you have to. But anyway, we got a whole bunch of episodes coming down the pipeline. We even brought on some editing help because, man, we are recording episodes. We got a whole bunch of stuff stockpiled for you, and we are excited for it to come out. Before that, though, we wanted to give you some new stuff just to know that we're still here. We still got your gaming backs. So here is another table talk. And, you know, we talked about releasing this a little bit later and putting out some story stuff. But because Diego and Maddie and Kevin start getting into some more topical stuff, let's say, some of the more timely things around the OGL and Cobalt Press's new Black Flag system, it only felt right to release that as soon as we can. And you know what? They did a great job. A lot of cool stuff came out of this conversation, but the best part, my favorite part, is them trying to do the outro. If you don't feel like listening to the whole episode, I think you're silly, but you should definitely listen to the outro because that'll tell you everything you need to know, except using the hashtag TheDiasCast on Twitter or Instagram, but we're better at Twitter in terms of hashtag usage. We'll find you, we'll retweet you, and we can't wait to give you some more content, baby. I digress. Here's Diego, Maddie, and Kevin on Table Talk number 4.
Welcome to the Die as Cast podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Die as Cast, our next episode of Table Talk.
Woo!
We have today with us Maddie and Diego. Maddie and Diego are also known as Maeve and Chisk.
But everybody in my real life also knows me as Chisk, so.
Yeah. It's actually on all of my legal documents.
So today on Table Talk, we've been having conversations in the backgrounds because of this, it might be a tempest in a teapot, but it feels very serious.
I've never heard that phrase before. That is excellent.
Tempest in a teapot. That's beautiful. It's poetic as hell.
It's poetic, Kevin.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I came up with it. There has been this call. This has happened a few weeks ago, obviously. It was sort of at its peak, but there's still this sort of ongoing debate, conversation. So let's start by just talking, just a very quick, simplified encapsulation. Effectively, and this is just my interpretation. Mm-hmm. I haven't read all of the posts. I haven't read certainly all of the documents and things around it. My interpretation of it is that several years ago, maybe close to a decade ago, Wizards of the Coast, owned by Hasbro, created the Open Gaming License, the OGL, that allowed other companies to create material that would be classified as officially 5e-based material. They then posted something at the start of the year that effectively said, we've changed our minds, we don't want to do that anymore, we're going to do a new one. And with the new one, it's effectively unchanged, except that if you sell more than $750,000 worth of material, we want 20% of it. So it was a huge change for a relatively minor upside. Because for a company like Hasbro to take 20% of some poor saps, mm-hmm. you know, two people sitting in Milwaukee cranking out.
Very specific.
Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Very important.
It's just these sort of these home-based businesses where these people are putting together a module, or they're putting together an adventure or a supplement. And then, you know, they make like 751 and then all of a sudden they got to give Hasbro $150,000.
Plus whatever they pay in taxes, you know, because that's all just regular income. From what I understand also, I think they wanted to like keep tabs on what people were working on before they were released. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit more of a kind of hands-on surveillance, if I can say that. I'm not really sure. That's feels like a strong word. But just to be checking on with companies about what they're working on. And I know it felt like, oh, you want to see, I don't know what that means. You know, it felt a little vague. So it was I think everybody was just wondering because it didn't feel super clear in what their intentions were until they came out with the announcement being like, okay, we're sorry. This is what we intended. We want to crack down on hateful content and all these things. But before then, it felt like everyone was just like, what's happening? Why this sudden change, you know?
Well, I'm suspicious of that kind of stuff simply because I know my corporate instincts would be to suck as much money out of people as possible. And then if I'm called on it, I will come up with a thing like, oh, I wanted to control the hateful content.
It's distressing that you have corporate instincts at all.
Everybody has corporate instincts. Capitalism, baby.
Not I.
Not a single capitalist bone in this body.
Oh, please. Sorry, if you got a raise, you would give it away.
Absolutely. My whole income.
I fully believe in redistributing wealth. Absolutely. I need to stay alive, but I believe in wealth redistribution. Okay, so I have a question. In terms of Wizards of the Coast wanting to, as Diego said, surveil what people were creating, does that have an impact on like smaller time creators? Or is it more influential for people who are creating and then distributing 5e content to make money?
I think it was going to affect any new publication of material, even existing stuff that was sort of in the pipeline. What I saw a lot of the game publishers do is say, we're going to rush this out, because they wanted to get the stuff out before the
new change.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the people who would affect most would be companies like Kobold Press or Critical Role that are putting out their content in books and things like that.
Right.
When I was putting out my first book, originally it was going to be sponsored by a big investment firm and they were going to cover the costs and et cetera, et cetera. But everything I wrote had to be submitted to them. Whoa. And it became super clunky to the point that I canceled the deal because they, first of all, there was a huge lag. I would send something and it would be wait. Then 2 weeks later, I'd get an email back and there'd be questions and I have to re-answer it. And it got down to sort of like page by page by page explaining things. So I think there's that corporate oversight that would be essential for Hasbro, right? Because they couldn't, if they're approving it, they have to approve it.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think that would really stymie a lot of the production and stuff, as opposed to, you know, three women sitting in Indianapolis cranking out.
Not Milwaukee this time.
Supplements.
Well, you gotta spread it out.
They've moved.
They're everywhere.
Better opportunities. Yeah, the surveillance aspect was sort of a creepy aspect. Or at least, you know what? It just sounded creepy. Like oversight.
It did.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you could get as suspicious as you want. Are they going to, like, steal ideas? Are they going to squelch something because they're coming out with something in 3 months that's going to be very similar?
Yeah.
You know, there's all that kind of stuff.
It literally specified, like, we can use your content and, like, sell stuff as our own. So that was, like, really, it felt just slimy a bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But here come our heroes, Paizo and Kobla Press.
Yes.
For those that don't know, Paizo is the company who creates Pathfinder. And they said, no, we're going to launch our own open RPG creative license and basically have everything be, what's it called when it's like public domain?
Public
basically.
Domain.
Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, the internet is the Creative Commons.
License. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what has Kobold Press done in response to this whole situation? What are we here to talk about?
We are here to talk about their first release of their first draft of the new open gaming license. And I assume Kobold Press and Paizo and the other related companies, I think Grim Press, Frog God Games, there's a list Frog somewhere.
God, what a dope name. Shout out to Frog God.
I have some Frog God material. It's pretty good. Yeah, it's a sampler of what the eventual open game will be. Yeah.
A playtest, if you will.
A playtest, indeed.
So, let's talk about the Black Flag. Have you guys had a chance to look through this sort of initial material?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of functionality right off the bat, it seems to look a lot like 5e.
Yeah, I agree.
I know they've peppered in a few cool new things like heritage and lineage. So you could be a dwarf that lives with elves and that will affect your character. I think that the heritage lineage thing is really cool. I think that that can allow people to play outside of the box. I do think it mirrors a lot of like race, sub-race, and background kind of things that we saw in 5e. But I think that's like a cool little feature. They also have a talents thing where I guess is like functionally a level one feat.
Feat, yeah.
For everybody. Mm-hmm. You can just pick.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've built the first level feats have been built into the backgrounds. So if you have the soldier background, you get this talent, which is a replacement for feats.
Now, at the beginning of the document, the packet, it says it's backwards compatible with 5e.
Yes. I don't know the source story, but I read somewhere that you could have like a 5e human and a Black Flag human in the same campaign and it would work.
Compatible. And it says here somewhere that these are meant to be slightly more powerful characters than 5e.
What does that mean?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I think maybe because you have the talent built into the first level, although some, like, for example, like a variant human gives you a feat right off the mm-hmm. bat. But for the majority of the other races, you get those later on. On my first pass, I didn't find anything that was particularly OP. But then again, these are just the races. We don't have the classes yet.
Yeah, they said right at the start that if you want the classes, go to 5e.
Right. But so based on what I'm reading here, it doesn't say anything that I'd be like, even if I was DMing at my table and I had, you know, a Black Flag character versus a 5e character, I wouldn't go, ooh, gotta pump up the 5e guy because otherwise it's not balanced, you know? It doesn't seem that way right off the bat to me. I think they're pretty on par with each other.
Yeah, it feels like what they're creating is the 5.5e.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree, Maddie, it's like 90% 5e.
But yeah. I'm looking at Kobold Press's What You Need to Know About Black Flag, and they have, quote, "We're doing 5e, but changing stuff that needs to be changed, and we're trying to do it in a way that keeps current 5e books and games useful." So it seems like they know the similarities, and it seems like mm-hmm. that's kind of the purpose.
And they're, I guess, by using stuff like lineage and heritage, you get rid of the possibility of clashing with whatever Hasbro is planning, even though they've said that they're coming back with something else. You really step away from, you're not using race, you're not using sub-race, you're not using those things, so there's no real danger.
That is one of the cleanest things I like about the Black Flag is that it creates the lineage. So it creates, you know, the basic biology shape of your body, whatever race you are. These are the attributes you have. And then it layers on, you know, so a dwarf raised with an elven lineage would have the elven heritage would have the elvish attributes, even though they have the dwarvish basic attributes. Oh. And that cleans up a lot of the current issue stigmas, whatever it is around all the other racial benefits, pluses and minuses. Because there's been lots of third party or maybe fourth party material out there that have sort of tried to address this stuff. But mm-hmm. a lot of that feels like you start to go down a different rabbit hole and you start to get very complex. Whereas mm-hmm. this just really simplifies it.
That is something that I remember reading as well. They kind of just wanted to make Black Flag as approachable and streamlined as possible so that more people could be onboarded and learn how to play Dungeons and Dragons, which I think is actually quite admirable. I think that there's a lot of murk surrounding even learning D&D. I remember how long it took me to play it and or to learn how to play it, and I still don't even know everything. So I think that, yeah, having this very simplified, distilled set of rules to work with is very approachable for people, and I think it's actually going to bring more people into the fold of this silly little dice game.
One of the commentators out there had this great line, and I won't get it exactly right, but he said, if you know how to play D&D, creating a character is a blast. If you don't know how to play D&D, creating a character is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Right? It's a huge nightmare.
I remember making my first character. I was like, I don't know what any of this is. I don't know the purpose of this.
Did you do it by yourself?
I did it mostly by myself.
Oh, God.
I tried to teach myself.
Oh, God.
And I remember coming to my first game and my DM was like, what have you done?
What is this?
Right. What I do right now still is when I have people who are brand new to the game playing, I just ask them, actually what Black Flag references, what's your character concept?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, all the very simplistic stereotypes. Do you want to be a knight? Do you want to be a sneaky thief type? Do you want to be a, you know, an old wizard or an old witch or whatever? And then I just hand them a pre-created sheet.
That's smart.
You know, we can start to customize it after they get into the groove of it. But if you're brand new to the game, you don't think, oh man, I would love to really just play a halfling Twilight cleric. That's what I've dreamed about since I was a little girl. Right?
Which, by the way, Twilight clerics are sick.
So sick.
Twilight clerics are broken.
They are a little broken, which is why me as a player, I love it.
Yeah, I want it.
Right. So that actually brings up or sort of leads into another thing. I remember seeing this great YouTube podcast where this guy said that for his players, for his brand new players, he just uses the sidekicks. So, you know, the sidekick mechanic out of like Xanathar's, or basically what they are NPCs that assist players.
Mm.
And so they're very, very simplified. So you have a spellcaster that's either clerical or wizardly. You have a fighter and you have a rogue type character that can be roguelike or bard-like. And they get like 3 skills through the course. They go up to 6th level, and that's as far as they go. I'm simplifying that too much, but the idea is you just capture the essence of the character.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that thought has stuck with me because, again, obviously you get some hardcore nerd types that can get into all the nuanced, you know, as a DM, when I look at all the choices and all the races and all the classes and subclasses and things, I've given up trying to figure out who can do what, why. Because there's lots of people who, you know, just love to, like, get into the nuances of this, this, and this, and this. And it, you know, they talk about character concepts as a sort of high-end literary view. But really, they just want to play Twilight clerics.
Yeah,
they just want to
be
able to do the healing, constant healing, forever, always.
Forever, always. Never take 1 point of damage.
Invincible!
That's right.
You need
For the whole party.
Why does the Twilight cleric always get targeted by the DM right at the start of the fight?
I think I played a Twilight cleric for like 3 games with my DM, and I was like, this feels amazing.
I'm a god!
I am a god. It was really wild.
One of the things that, this isn't directly connected to the whole Black Flag thing or anything around this, is I love that simplified idea. Like, it would be so refreshing to say, okay, there are 4 classes and 5 races with 2 variations, like the heritage. There's in the example, there are 2 types of dwarven heritage, 2 types of elven heritages, and 2 types of human heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 10 heritages to draw from. You also have these 4 classes, go nuts from there. And then the customization comes in, but with the talents, then the customization, you know.
Do you mean that for beginners, or do you mean that for all players?
I mean, definitely for beginners, but I think it could be, if you're trying to create a story, if you're trying to step back and create a story, and I actually thought about this, it gets quite exciting. Like if exciting in a totally DM nerd way.
I'm just simply trembling.
Yes.
Ooh, let me tell you about this.
I mean, what are the basic classes? The basic classes are fighter, mage, cleric, thief.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Those are sort of the, if you're missing one of those, there's a gap.
That's what like first edition D&D.
Right. I mean, with first edition D&D, all elves were fighter mages and all dwarves were, I think they were just fighters, but whatever. and then from that, you know, druids, bards, paladins, rangers, monks, all of these are basically, and like, I don't want to get in trouble here, but they're basically variations on one of the four original classes.
We're going to catch a lot of fire here, Kevin. We're going to catch some fire.
Uh-oh.
Hey, more engagement on the Twitter page. So that's what I say.
So what if you just had, and this isn't, again, what Black Flag is suggesting, but what it prompted in me is, what if you just have those four classes and then you create a druid-like cleric or a paladin-like fighter using the talents?
How many talents are allotted to you, though? Because I was under the impression it was one.
You get one with your background at the start, and then, as far as I can tell, you get them every four levels. Like,
oh, like taking a feat.
Right. It's very similar that way.
Okay.
It's just the talents could be used to start to add more flavor.
And also, I don't know if we've said this, but this is the playtest packet 1.1. They're still coming out with more stuff. Yeah,
there's going to be, I think, a spell casting one in March, mm-hmm. which will be interesting to see how they handle magic, which is one of the most complicated parts of this game.
Yeah.
How are we going to streamline that? I don't know. We'll see.
You know, we haven't even talked about other types of systems, and I think 5e feels to me, like I was a big second edition player. I didn't get involved with 3, 3.5, 4. I've played like Traveler and Shadowrun, but 5e seems like a pretty good distillation of a lot of the different rules and things. And it feels like a pretty good balance between complexity and simplicity. Mm-hmm. And that could be solely because I'm used to it now, of course.
Well, I think we've talked about it on the podcast on a different table talk before, is that like 5e doesn't get bogged down by the rules. It's not about like, it totally lets you just play within the game without having to be too like, oh, I can't do this because my freaking elf can't do this, you know, or whatever.
My freaking elf. My stupid little guy.
What's the guy? The annoying little, oh, I can't do anything. What's his name? I forget his name.
Oh, God. Where's Griffin when you need him?
Who won? Who beat your guys? Just point that out.
We don't talk about that.
We don't talk about it. That's really traumatic.
Not that part. But yeah, you can just focus on the role playing, which is the exciting part of D&D, in my opinion.
I wholeheartedly agree. The math is so secondary for me.
Mm-hmm.
For the people who love the math, it's a strategic game.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And it comes down to number of hit points damage created versus number of hit points damage taken.
Min-maxing.
Turn efficiency.
Yeah. All of that stuff. And I think everybody has some element of that. Like, everyone gets fully satisfied when they do, you know, it's not a role play thing that you love that you did 17 damage as opposed to 7. That's a strategic joy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that the game should be one or the other. I think the blend that everybody, I think, instinctively does is, yeah, it seems like a good mix. And also, of course, everybody's different goals and different desires.
Yeah, you play different for sure.
Yeah. Here's sort of a core question. When Black Flag is implemented, does everybody flip to it? Is there enough of a distinction? Or is it simply the fact that it's now a game system that can't be taken away from anybody and people start to tweak their game around it?
So here is my take on this, because I've been playing D&D solely on 5e. I know I played a little bit of Starfinder, and it was a little too difficult for me.
Right, because those set of rules are way more complex and
they are. Yeah, for me, having something that's new that cannot be taken away, with people that we know, love, and trust. Because it's not so different, I would easily just jump to this. You know what I mean? Like, it feels familiar enough that I'd be like, I can just jump right in, create a character, and just start playing right from the get-go. So I would have no hesitation moving on to this. I don't know if everybody will, because then, you know, you have to get into what books do I buy? What, you know, all this stuff that you have to spend extra cash, which, like, some people might just have all these stacks of books in their homes. Like, I kind
of
do.
I have spent so much money on Wizards of the Coast material, like, so much money. And so the idea of having to do that again is very
stressful,
turbulent in my mind. But yeah, I agree with Diego. I think that, at least for right now, I feel like transitioning to this mode of play as a player would be very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it is so similar.
Yeah, it's a refinement of the 5e system. It's not a completely brand new system. Which is what I was worried they were going to try, right? They were going to try to make like a Fate game or some of these other games that the mechanics are just so much more different. But that brings up an interesting point, or I don't know if it's interesting, but it occurs to me. So we'll find out.
Really, I guess this we'll is find all out very if interesting.
It is, and this has been brought up on the interwebs as well. But does the OGL mean anything? Right?
What do you mean?
Like the how much of this like the Black Flag stuff is so similar to the D&D stuff, but how much of that could Wizards of the Coast copyrighted in the first place?
Really? I was wondering that as well. Like, because it is so similar, and even in their like playtest packet, I mean, this is not new stuff, but the fonts are even the same as the stuff that, like, Wizards of the Coast has printed. So I'm like,
that's funny.
It is very, very similar. And I do wonder about Hasbro and Wizards of the Coast surveillance of stuff like this. Like, I don't know. I think that's a really interesting question, Kevin. It is actually very interesting.
Oh, that's good.
Even the whole thing about the OGL originally was that it was irrevocable. Right. Yeah. So when they came out with this, people were like, they're going to get a lawsuit very easily because this was like a public document where you said you're not going to change anything about this. And now you're changing your mind.
Right. And even more basically, what is the conversation being had by the Hasbro execs about why do they want to create a new system as opposed to, or not a new system, but a new version of the existing system? It's got to be profit driven.
Yeah, it's financially motivated, certainly.
And also it's cleaning up some of the stuff. But, you know, like I keep thinking of this as the next sort of revision, next version of 5e. So I think the 5.1 analogy that I've heard other people reference is exactly right. Or the 5.5, whatever the numbers they are. Because really what they're trying to do here is, yes, definitely. Well, it feels simple because it's a 12-page document, but it's not, obviously, it's not the end document. The end document will be 300 pages.
It'll be a big old book that you can purchase and put with your other books.
I have very few actual paper books now of stuff. My stuff is
digital.
I'm so happy for you.
Almost all PDFs or Fantasy Ground modules, simply because they all get updated.
That's another thing is that, so the guy who, he's a big YouTuber, he had some interviews with some of the D&D Beyond executives and got some quotes and stuff like that. And basically, Wizards of the Coast is coming up with their own VTT, virtual tabletop.
Oh,
And well, there's been trailers and stuff for that stuff, and they're creating it in Unreal Engine, which is going to look fantastic. And, you know, it's going to have all the mechanics of like fire as you click to cast and all this stuff. But that was another part of the OGL that was like cracking down on VGT stuff, because in essence, what they said is that they wanted to move everything because they see the future of D&D as being digital. So they wanted to provide as much possibility for virtual tabletop, or at least their virtual tabletop, to succeed. The new OGL was going to crack down on other third-party VTT people to not use their content. So you could use like table mechanics like rolling a die or whatever, but they couldn't add stuff like mage hand or whatever. They couldn't add those things to make it more like D&D as like a video game. They wanted to be the sole VTT version of D&D. And that, again, it comes down to just money and it being a money grab.
I mean, I understand the tactic of wanting to sort of create this internal thing, but I'm not sure. I don't understand. Again, the rationale seems strange because right now you can buy Wizards of the Coast material through all the big VTTs. So you're already having a revenue stream and you don't have the hassle of trying to maintain the virtual tabletop.
Yeah.
And secondly, related to that, if you do want to get into that, why not just buy one of the existing ones?
Mm. Which is the way they were going. They bought D&D Beyond, right? So
right. So why don't they just buy Fantasy Grounds or Roll 20 and leverage off the existing tech or leverage off the existing experience or like with Fantasy Grounds, leverage off the existing subscriber base that is already huge.
Maybe it's a pride thing.
It might be.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just speculating.
Or it could be that the Fantasy Grounds people want a super outrageous price for their little business. And
yeah, we'll never know.
A Hasbro spreadsheet goes, no, to capitalize that, we would need 17 years of this kind of revenue growth, blah, blah, blah. So
it costs us $6,000 to create our own. Do you think? Yeah.
That's crazy. That sounds wild to me. But again, I just think, I mean, for me at least, I know it's fun to play in VTT. And for example, us, we don't really have a choice. I mean, we don't play VTT, but you do, Kevin. But for me, at least the fun of the game is in person, like yes, at the table, totally rolling agree. Dice. It like if we had a choice, we'd probably be playing in person, you know, recording this podcast. But I live in a different city and the rest of the cast have been very gracious to accommodate me.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, initially they weren't, Diego. Yeah. I've never brought this up, but they didn't. They were.
They hated the idea.
Oh, man. Yeah, Maddie, like, put her foot down.
Yeah. I heard. Yeah, I heard. I didn't want to mention it.
When you got brought up, and we were like, I don't know if that's a good idea. But, I mean, you're on pretty thin ice. It's working so far, but you're on thin ice.
Thank God. Thank God. People, get in the comments on Twitter. Tell him how much you love me.
I have a feeling almost everybody's on thin ice with Maddie, though.
I'm a nice person. I'm a delight to be around.
We would definitely be playing in person, right? And so I think the heart of the game...
If Griffin let us, the tech problems around doing their mic pick.
He would have a sound. Freaking aneurysm. The levels, guys.
Your core point is absolutely right. The game is much more fun when you're all sitting at the same table. Oh, and the energy is different. And the snacks are better.
You're
much more connected. The snacks. Well, yes, that's true. But there is definitely a lost energy when people are playing online. It's not as much as I initially thought it would be.
The loss, you mean?
Yeah, the loss of this sort of shared feeling. And maybe that fades as we just get more used to it. I think about it from the point of view of like some 8-year-old interacting with their grandparents. For that 8-year-old, there's no difference between them talking on a tablet to their grandparents than face to face.
There's something to it because we're all actors. I don't know who you play with outside of this, but I imagine if you're not an actor or if you're not like super engaged into the role playing, it would become a lot harder to do it over like a Zoom call or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's not the same energy that you can, that, you know, you get affected by and the emotional storytelling too.
There's no instant feedback online. Cause like in the room, if you're a new player and you're nervous about role playing and you try something in the room, you can kind of sense if like that's supported. And online, there's a whole lot that's lost. The vibe is lost.
Yeah.
Straight vibes.
Although, for the introverted D&D player, does the online give them a sort of safety that they wouldn't have if they felt six other people looking at them?
That is also a good point. I wouldn't know.
It's hard for me to know.
I was going
to
say, I don't know that feeling.
I totally agree. There is a different, better energy when you're face to face.
I would be very devastated if D&D went entirely online in digital. The future. I would be very, very sad.
I think I would try my best to still play in person. I'm running a game at home that I just started, and it's so nice.
It's different.
It's nice.
What the online stuff is, it adds an opportunity to connect. If we were going to do this D&D project, we can add you in because of the online aspect of it.
Again, gracious that you've all allowed me to be part of this. Thank you.
One more nat one and you're out.
Oh, those are coming, baby. Those are coming. You know
it. One more? What?
Yeah, no, Chis's purpose is to make everyone else look good. That's a valid...
He's a cleric. That's the point.
Yeah, he is supportive.
Even outside of the game.
That's right.
So...
To get back to Black Flag for a second.
Yeah. What does that mean for us, little podcast people? Are we going to playtest Black Flag?
Yes.
Ah! Absolutely.
Confirmed.
Confirmed. Yeah. You heard it here first.
Especially since it's so similar and requires no extra effort on my part, I'm happy to support when it doesn't inconvenience me at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, obviously we'll have to see a lot of what the final stuff looks like. Things that I would have liked to see are going beyond level 20.
Whoa.
Wait, do they have a level 20 cap?
Yeah, well, they only have level 20 listed, yeah.
Hmm.
I think the idea. Now, of course, how often do people get beyond level 20 is...
I feel like most games don't get past 12.
And I realize now that the other things that I really liked are just the fact that there's only two types of dwarves and only two types of elves. And that's not how it's going to end up.
Oh, see, but I like I like the variety. I really do.
I agree. I agree. I like trying new things and changing it up and things like that.
Right. That's 100%. And I'm not using this as any kind of dismissive way, but that's 100% a player focus. And I totally get it because I do the exact same thing when I'm playing. The problem just becomes literally the mechanics of the DMing. Like in my Fantasy Ground games, how many modules do I open? Like in terms of spending money, I've spent way too much money. And these are all virtual things, so I don't even get a nice bookshelf to look at.
That is one thing I do have, is a nice bookshelf.
The other thing I really liked, and again, I sort of referenced it earlier, but I love the idea of the talents. There's some sort of third-party material out there called Monster Talents. I guess they also do character talents. Mm. But I love this idea of being able to customize the monsters or the NPCs you're fighting with some individual orc or troll has some skill that throw the players off. Because how can a troll do that kind of thing? But the idea of creating a customized character from your talents, I mean, to take it to its extreme, you could ever have everybody, they don't pick a class. They just start and things happen to them, which then lead them to become more cleric-like or more wizard-like or more fighter-like.
I remember you talking about that. I think when it was pre-game, talking about structuring something like that.
Yeah, it's in terms of the actual game mechanics, it probably won't work very well.
Yeah, it'd be tough.
Well, it comes back to sort of game design, or not even game design, world design. You know, are these uniquely powerful individuals that are sort of above the average individual, or are these average individuals who have things happen to them and develop these things around that?
Right.
And, you know, there's lots of like literary examples of both types, right. And neither one is positive or negative. This idea of talents is probably the single most interesting thing to me. And I think one DM or whatever they're going to come up with as a final name is also leaning that way. It felt like they were doing it in a much clunkier way than what Black Flag is doing.
Confirmed by Kevin Cork, we will be playtesting. Is that true? Yeah.
Yeah, I think the playtest will be with maybe a one shot. idea.
Sick. Ooh. Love it.
Oh, listeners, you are getting the inside scoop right now.
Booyah.
You know what's coming.
And it makes total sense to have some of these major third-party players get together and say, let's create a structure that we can all work with. And we're not going to try to make money off this structure. We're just going to try to create a little more independence. There'll be a few more people developing similar systems, and it'll, you know, it'll all flesh out which one ends up being the most popular one. I think overall, we're definitely on board with at least experimenting with Black Flag.
Yeah.
Do you guys agree?
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Excellent. All right, everybody. This is Kevin Cork from the Die As Cast podcast. Maddie, do you want to give any kind of shout out or tell people where they can find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Madeline Hunter Smith and on Twitter, if you're still there, at Madeline H. Smith.
Have you moved over to Mastodon?
No, I'm trying to actually limit my social media use because I believe it's poison.
Okay. Griffin, take that out.
No.
Leave it.
All right. Diego.
Well, I'm on social medias as Diego Stredel, DiegoStredel. Pause it. Go back if you want to listen to that again. I'm not repeating it. but I'm on Twitch as well. I've been playing some games on Twitch. So if you have any questions, yeah. I'm live Tuesdays and Thursdays. So come hang out, ask, watch some fun games and hang out.
And if you want to complain about Maddie's poisonous social media comment, please contact me at griffin@thediascast.com.
Wow, you handle that.
Wow. And
you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at the Die As Cast, or go to us directly on the web, dieascast.com.
That's right.
All of our regular episodes, storylines, interviews, features, and photos.
Thank you to Morgan Ermter for the design of the Die As Cast. Thank you to Maps and Melodies for the music and melodies. I'm not Griffin Cork, so I don't know exactly how it goes, but is there anything anybody else we need to shout out? Cobalt Press, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
That's it.
And thank you.
And thank you.
That's right. For
following us on social media.
We fall apart without Griffin, hey?
It's a community effort.
All right, everybody.
All right.
Thanks again.
Bye.
Later. Bye-bye.
We'll see you next time.